The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter and probably from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter as well. And the first issue comes from the Harvard Health Letter of February 2023, and it's entitled Easy Ways to Keep Inflammation in Check. Incorporating lots of healthy habits into your day may help ward off chronic inflammation and keep you healthier. A mattress, a toothbrush, and a salmon dinner. On the surface, those items don't seem to have much in common, but they all represent healthy lifestyle habits that help fight chronic inflammation, a persistent state of the immune system that's linked to many health problems. And the more healthy habits you practice, even simple ones, the better chance you'll have at thwarting chronic inflammation and disease. What is inflammation? Normally, inflammation is part of how the body responds to threats, such as injury or invading microbes. The body sends special cells to attack and isolate invaders, clean up debris, and heal tissue and organs. It's an important system that kicks into high gear when we need it and returns to normal when health is restored. But sometimes the immune system continues indefinitely, fueled by unhealthy lifestyle habits. A constantly active immune system does more harm than good. It damages tissues and organs and increases the risk for asthma, rheumatoid arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease, diabetes, heart disease, dementia, weight gain, heart attacks, and strokes. Fortunately, for reasons we don't fully understand, certain healthy habits can counter chronic inflammation. A healthy diet, exercising regularly, getting enough sleep, maintaining good oral health, and reducing stress all reduce inflammation. If those strategies seem too big to take on all at once, just start with small steps in their direction, like the following. First of all, you should eat fatty fish twice a week. Here's that salmon dinner we mentioned earlier. Salmon and other fatty fish like anchovies, halibut, sardines, and tuna contain omega-3 fatty acids that reduce inflammation. Omega-3s disrupt the production of chemicals that cause inflammation by certain immune system cells. They may even help lower the risk of stroke and for the type of brain inflammation associated with Alzheimer's disease, says Dr. Robert Schmerling, a rheumatologist and medical editor of the Harvard Special Health Report, Fighting Inflammation. But our body doesn't make omega-3s. We need to get them from food. Other ways to fight inflammation with diet include minimizing processed food and added sugars, and eating lots of fruits and vegetables, legumes, whole grains, poultry, fish, and healthy oils like olive and canola oil. Get a new mattress. Does your mattress make you toss and turn? Even one night of disturbed sleep can spark inflammation, Dr. Schmerling says. It increases inflammatory substances in the blood. Regularly missing sleep contributes to obesity, which is also linked to inflammation. If you suspect that the fix for your poor sleep is a new mattress, or maybe just a mattress topper, it's worth the investment. Getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep per night is associated with a reduced risk for many chronic diseases, including dementia. We're all supposed to brush our teeth twice per day and floss them at least once per day. It's necessary to brush away the bacteria that can inflame the gums, lead to infection, and cause inflammation or infection elsewhere in the body. Evidence suggests bacteria can travel to the heart, the lungs, and even the brain. Inflammation in the gums also is strongly associated with diabetes, says Dr. Tian Jiang, a prosthodontist in the Department of Oral Health Policy and Epidemiology at the Harvard School for Dental Medicine. Go for a walk. Aerobic exercise, the kind that gets your heart and lungs working, like brisk walking, is an important way to fight chronic inflammation. It helps to reduce body fat, which contains inflammation-promoting substances. Exercise may also increase the production of hormones that help to keep inflammation in check. Dr. Schmerling says, we all need at least 150 minutes of aerobic activity per week to stay healthy. If you've been inactive for a while, start with a 5-minute daily walk and work your way up to 20 or 30 minutes a day. If you have heart disease or are at increased risk for it, check with your doctor about the best exercise program. Do some deep breathing exercises. Feeling stressed? Chronic stress promotes inflammation and is linked to several chronic inflammatory conditions, including rheumatoid arthritis, cardiovascular disease, depression, and inflammatory bowel disease. To reduce stress, practice relaxation-promoting exercise, like yoga or deep breathing. Studies have found that people who take part in those types of exercise have less stress and fewer inflammatory markers in the blood, Dr. Schmerling says. An easy deep breathing exercise is to sit quietly, take a deep breath, and hold it for a count of three. Breathe out, then pause for a count of three. Do that for 1 minute, and make sure you feel your belly rising and falling with each breath, so you know you're breathing deeply. Practicing just one of these simple strategies probably won't be enough to ward off chronic inflammation. We don't have convincing evidence that an individual food choice like salmon will make a meaningful difference against chronic inflammation if processed foods and sugary drinks which promote inflammation are still part of your diet. But you have to start somewhere. If that's swapping out an unhealthy meal for a healthier one, you're on the right track. Then add another healthy habit and another. The combined effects of those habits will eventually add up to keeping you healthier. Now let's go on with the Harvard Health Letter and go over the section that's called Ask the Doctor with Dr. Anthony Komaroff, who's the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Health Letter. The question is, what's the minimum amount of exercise I need each week? Question. You're always writing that regular physical activity improves our health. I believe you. But I don't like to exercise. What's the minimum I need to do to get a benefit? You're not alone in disliking exercise. Only 20% of middle-aged and older adults spend 15 minutes per week in vigorous physical activity. Vigorous physical activity means an activity which is hard to talk or sing when you do it, like jogging or exercising on a treadmill. What's the minimum you should do? Well, I have some good news. A recent study conducted by scientists around the world, including colleagues here at Harvard, concludes that you don't need that much physical activity every week to gain substantial health benefits. The study enrolled 72,000 people between 50 and 80 years old. All of them were free of diagnosed heart disease or cancer at the start of the study. A strength of the study was that the amount of vigorous physical activity people did was tracked by a device that measured their actual level of activity. Many past studies just relied on participants to report their physical activity, which can be very inaccurate. The study participants' health was followed over the next 5 years. Even the people who did only 15 minutes per week of vigorous physical activity had a 17% lower risk of death from any cause and death from cancer compared with people who were inactive. With about 50 minutes per week, death from any cause was reduced by 36%. The reduction in risk of death from all causes and death from cancer was greatest in the first 40 minutes of vigorous physical activity per week. In contrast, death from heart disease continued to decline substantially with each additional minute beyond 40 minutes. For me, and that's Dr. Komaroff, there are several important messages from this study. If vigorous physical activity doesn't immediately appeal to you, moderate physical activity like brisk walking for 150 minutes per week and ideally 300 minutes per week also has a proven health benefit. But if you're up for trying at least some vigorous physical activity, aim for 40 minutes per week, unless you're at increased risk for heart disease, in which case you should strive for more. Your activity does not have to be done all at once. It can be done in short bursts that add up over the week to your goal. Some of these short bursts can be things you're doing anyway, like climbing stairs. And if you're someone like me who enjoys physical activity because you feel good during and after the activity, be as active as you can be. You get additional health benefits with each additional minute. It's the best return on investment that you'll ever get. The next article from the Harvard Health Letter, again from February 2023, is entitled, How to Choose and Guide Your Healthcare Proxy. Make sure it's someone you can trust who'd be able to carry out your wishes in a variety of circumstances and environments. Imagine the people in your life as workers in a company that takes care of you. The job of healthcare proxy or health surrogate, the person who will make healthcare decisions for you if you become unable to make them yourself, would be considered a high-level executive. But many people leave that job vacant, or they give little direction to the person appointed to fill the role. If you do that, there might not be anyone to carry out your wishes. How can you avoid that? You need to choose a healthcare proxy carefully, and then make clear to that person what you want. For advice on this challenging task, we turn to Dr. James Tulsky, Chief of the Division of Palliative Medicine at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital and Chair of the Department of Psychosocial Oncology and Palliative Care at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Question. Dr. Tulsky, who's the best person for the job? It should be someone you trust who knows you well, like a family member or friend. This person will need the emotional ability and presence of mind to be a decision maker. And the decisions will have to reflect what you would want, no matter the health scenario or environment, like a hospital, long-term care facility, or your home. What scenarios will your proxy face? That's hard to predict. Patients are often in situations where they're impaired, but they're not brain dead or in a persistent vegetative state, so it's not a matter of whether to pull the plug. It's usually more of a nuanced situation. Someone is seriously ill. There's a number of potential treatment options, and there's a huge amount of uncertainty about what's going to happen next. For example, maybe you lost decision-making capacity due to a major infection. During treatment, things go poorly. Aggressive treatments could be pursued, and there might be a small chance of recovery, but that has to be balanced with the large reality of suffering, expense, and the possibility that you'll be severely incapacitated and unaware of your surroundings when you recover. The proxy must decide how much longer you receive treatment, and it's difficult. That's why the proxy must understand your wishes and how you'd want them to be applied. How do you convey your wishes? It's a process. You need to have a conversation with your proxy about the values that are dear to you. Consider discussing your personal faith or beliefs, who will be available to care for you, quality of life, the possibility of dementia and disability, and the financial and emotional burden of long-term care. Talk about the fact that there may be complicated situations and what that might mean for decisions to be made on your behalf. Should you write out your wishes? It might be useful to write a letter to your proxy summarizing what you talked about, so he or she can refer to it in a challenging situation. But it's not just about having a checklist, because almost certainly what you'd want would be something you haven't considered. It's more about a general understanding of the kind of decision that you would make. What else do you need on paper? You need a legal document to formalize your selection of a healthcare proxy. It's called a durable power of attorney for healthcare. You can have an attorney create the document, often as part of your advance directive, or you can find a document online for free, typically on your state health department website. You'll have to get it notarized. Who needs to see the document? Your healthcare proxy and your healthcare team need a copy of the document. Ask the team to upload it to your electronic health record. If that doesn't happen and the document can't be found, it is useless. What if you don't have a proxy? If there's no obvious decision maker among family or friends, the state may have to appoint a guardian. That means a stranger will act on your behalf and guess what you'd want. It's better to get a healthcare proxy now, when you're thinking clearly and can communicate what you want. Now, here's a useful article from the Harvard Health Letter, again, February 2023. It's entitled, Bring a Fuzzy Memory Back into Focus. Treating Underlying Conditions, Living a Healthy Lifestyle, and Doing Crossword Puzzles May Help. If you're like most people aged 50 or older, your power of recall has lost a little wattage. That becomes clear if you often forget where you left your glasses or can't remember why you walked into a room. Those everyday lapses in memory are normal in middle and older age. Why is that, and can you do anything to change it? Age-related brain changes. Subtle changes occur everywhere in the body as we get older, including in the brain. Some of those changes affect memory. For example, a brain region called the hippocampus, which plays a big role in learning and memory, shrinks a little, and structural and chemical changes in brain cells make it harder for them to communicate. That makes it challenging for us to concentrate or absorb and recall new information. On top of aging, some people have health conditions that make it harder to concentrate or remember information. Examples include depression, thyroid disease, vitamin deficiency, migraine headaches, or medication side effects. Sleep deprivation can also affect your memory. To learn new information, you need to be alert so you can pay attention. But it's hard to be alert if you're tired, says Dr. Andrew Budson, a neurologist and chief of cognitive and behavioral neurology at the VA Boston Healthcare System. And to store a memory over time, you need to consolidate it during sleep, when brain cell connections become strengthened. If your sleep is interrupted or of poor quality, the strengthening process may be disrupted, Dr. Budson says. Some memory problems can be early signs of dementia. While forgetting where you put your glasses is a concerning symptom, forgetting what glasses are for, or forgetting the names of family members is something to take more seriously. If you suspect that you have a health condition that is contributing to a fuzzy memory, see your doctor to figure out what the problem is and get it under control. Keeping the brain as healthy as possible might help slow age-related brain changes. The best way to do that is by living a healthy lifestyle. Exercising regularly, at least 150 minutes per week of moderate intensity exercise, like brisk walking. Giving yourself the opportunity to sleep 7 to 9 hours per night, eating a Mediterranean-style diet, managing stress, socializing, and learning new things. These habits work together to help create new connections between brain cells and to maintain existing ones, which helps keep thinking and memory sharp. In addition, you can help keep your memory in good shape by practicing certain habits. Pay attention and put effort into the learning process, Dr. Budson says. Many people believe that they can learn information and retrieve memories while they multitask, but the evidence shows that they cannot. If someone is talking to you while you're checking your email or watching TV out of the corner of your eye, you're not likely to remember what they said. Write down the information, say it out loud, or repeat it back to the person. It's important to relax and try to go back in your mind to the time and place when you formed the memory. Think about the senses that were engaged. What did you see, hear, smell, taste, or touch? What were your feelings at the time? The brain ties those perceptions to memories as a way to help you retrieve them later, Dr. Budson explains. Make your brain work harder. Challenge it with exercises like crossword puzzles. A small randomized trial of people with mild cognitive impairment, published online October 27, 2022, by NEJM Evidence, found that people who did online crossword puzzles for 18 months had less brain shrinkage and performed better on memory tests than people who took part in online cognitive games that included memory, matching, spatial recognition, or processing speed tasks for 18 months. Many studies have shown that doing moderately difficult cognitive tasks is better for your brain than doing easy tasks. A good crossword puzzle, in particular, causes you to use large areas of your brain to come up with the correct word, and that will, in turn, keep those areas of your brain strong. Finally, crossword puzzles, at least in my household, are usually a social activity, in that the person with the puzzle will frequently call on others nearby for help. And the more we connect with others, the more we'll keep our brain cells connected, firing, and ready to work. Now I'm going to turn to a section called News Briefs in the Harvard Health Letter of February 2023. And the first of these is called A Pill-Free Way to Treat Anxiety. For people with an anxiety disorder, chronic intense worry that makes it hard to concentrate or sleep, first-line treatments are often medications called antidepressants. They can have side effects like nausea, fatigue, headache, or sexual dysfunction. A randomized trial published online in November 2022 by JAMA Psychiatry found that a pill-free approach might be just as effective for reducing anxiety symptoms. Scientists randomly assigned about 300 people to either take an antidepressant called escitalopram or Lexapro every day, or participate in a mindfulness-based stress reduction program. The program included 45 minutes of daily meditation at home and a weekly 2.5-hour in-person class with an instructor. Participants learned a number of mindfulness techniques, like breath awareness and stretching, designed to bring awareness to the body. After 8 weeks, both groups had similar results, reducing anxiety symptoms by about 30% over that period. Now, here's an important brief article. Poor sleep is linked to a common cause of blindness. Poor sleep is tied to many health problems like weight gain, mood disorders, and dementia. Now, a large study published online by BMJ Open suggests that poor sleep is also linked to a higher risk for developing glaucoma, a leading risk of blindness. The study involved 400,000 people without glaucoma who were followed for 10 years. Researchers evaluated participants' medical records and self-reported sleep habits. People who had unhealthy sleep patterns like snoring, daytime sleepiness, insomnia, sleeping less than 7 hours per night, or sleeping more than 9 hours per night were more likely to develop glaucoma than people who had healthy sleep patterns. People who had insomnia or slept too much or too little had the highest risk for glaucoma, 13% higher than people without these problems. The study was observational and doesn't prove conclusively that unhealthy sleep behaviors cause glaucoma. So what's the possible link? Study authors say eye pressure increases when you lie down, and when your sleep hormones are out of kilter, which occurs in insomnia. That might be a plausible explanation for glaucoma risks. Since the condition is caused by increased pressure on the optic nerves, which connect the eyes to the brain. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.